Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner. This is your host, Dr. Bill Lampton on WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brunel, Brunel University that is, broadcasting from the lovely John W. Jacobs Building on the Brunel campus, named in honor of my good friend John W. Jacobs, a longtime benefactor of Brunel University and also of this entire community. Good to be with you today as we are on Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. and then on Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. as the Tuesday program is rebroadcasted. As we mentioned recently, we have just completed our first year of the Communication Corner. We're very excited about the 46 guests that we have hosted, and we're hosting an exciting one today. Time to say good morning to my co-host, Christina Rhodes, the General Station Manager, also the host of two other programs, Above and Beyond and Ocean Breeze. Good morning to you, Christina.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. You know, I was reading in the paper about you. I read that you had participated in a local event this week, which I thought had wonderful significance and direct relationship to what you can contribute to people. Tell us about that, please.
It was an event hosted by a Disability Resource Center right here in Gainesville, right off the square. And it was in celebration of the Olmstead decision, which was made in 1999. And what it did was say that people with disabilities shouldn't be confined to nursing homes. So it was a huge step in the direction of independence and in the rights for people with disabilities. And so this specific event held by Disability Resource Center was entitled Celebrating Abilities and Advocating for Olmstead. So I had the honor of being the keynote speaker there and went and spoke about independence and that positive attitude I like to talk a lot about.
Well, speaking of your positive attitude, tell us your slogan, which you share on your other programs.
My slogan is, happiness is yours to choose or reject, so embrace it. Sing out loud, hug somebody, smile for me, and don't forget to dance to the music.
That's fabulous. All of us need to think along those lines. Well, ever since I've known you, of course, I've recognized that you focus more on abilities, on what you can do instead of what you can't do. And any of us in life, that's a great lesson for us.
Right. Because what I like to talk about in my speaking is that we all have challenges. Mine happen to be physical. Some of mine, I have more than just that, but some of mine happen to be physical, and everybody has their own set of challenges. And so we all have the same opportunity in that to overcome these challenges, whatever they may be.
Well said. Well, while you were doing that, I was celebrating Father's Day. Had a good weekend doing that. Didn't get to see my two daughters, but not only did we talk on the phone, which we do most weekends, but they sent me some very meaningful gifts. And one thing about these two daughters, they have a grand sense of humor, and every special occasion, whether it's Father's Day, my birthday, or anything else, I look forward to the cards that they're sending because I know they're going to have a real kick. They're going to be really terrific.
Yeah, Bill, you know, you're lucky to have two wonderful daughters, and you talk a lot about them and your grandkids, and so it's always good to be able to talk to them on a day like Father's Day when they're celebrating you and all that you've been in their lives.
Right. Karen Chase on the line. Good morning, Karen.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us, Karen?
Yes, I can.
Very good. Well, it's terrific to interview a professional storyteller. Most of us probably have never met a professional storyteller, and it's wonderful to introduce you to our audience today. And one of the things that I was noticing as I was reading your bio was that you made this statement. You said that since I have become a professional storyteller, I've been hot air ballooning over New Hampshire, swum with the sharks in Florida, flown into a dormant volcano in Hawaii. And by the way, Karen, I'm glad it's dormant, or you wouldn't be talking with us. Ziplined through the jungle in Mexico, and then you go on, Dad. But nothing excites me more than finding just the right story to share. Storytelling has given so much to me. End quote. And, of course, I know that you've given much to storytelling because, as I will be explaining in my blog later today, you are an award-winning storyteller. And isn't it interesting that you and I have corresponded for several years by the Internet and yet never have met in person but feel like we know each other and our professional life quite well?
That's exactly what I was thinking this morning as I was preparing and going over some things for the interview, how wonderful the Internet is and the kind of connections we can make today that were never possible 10 years ago. So it's really wonderful to finally get to speak with you directly, even if it's not face-to-face.
Well, and we finally get to speak directly after a few minutes' delay there.
Right. well worth the wait.
Right. Well, before we get to the questions that I want to ask, and I know our listeners are eager to hear, I certainly caught in our correspondence the other day that you're a big Boston Red Sox fan.
Mm-hmm.
You attended a game recently. You just missed, you said, catching a fly ball, I believe.
Yes. So we had wonderful seats that were very close to the third baseline, and a lot of foul balls come that way. But it's all good fun, and we always have a wonderful time every opportunity we have to go cheer on our team. And, of course, it was the day before the big Bruins parade for the Stanley Cup, so the stands were filled with people sporting Bruins shirts as well.
Quite a different reaction in Boston than there was in Vancouver.
Yes.
quite a different reaction. Hey, I got a kick, too, thinking about you're talking about getting your box of Cracker Jack at the ball game. That brought back wonderful childhood memories for me, and you and I talked about the prize. It's still in the box.
It's still in the box, and what a wonderful marketing tool that they've put to good use all these years.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's get to the logical starting place. Karen, you said that there was an event that you attended in 1999 that prompted you to become a professional storyteller. Let's begin with you describing the event and why it had such a powerful, life-changing, lasting impact on you.
Well, at the time, I did not even know that storytelling existed other than, you know, in the stories that my mother would read to me as a child. But at this time, I was actually working two part-time jobs, both as a preschool teacher and in my local elementary school. So my schedule would coincide with my young son at the time. And I was also on the PTO board at the school, and there happened to be a teachers' conference coming up in New Hampshire. And the principal of the school asked me if I would be a parent liaison at the conference. It was for talented and gifted children, and, of course, I happily attended. And one of the days of the conference, during our lunch hour, right at the end of, you know, the meal, they had a storyteller. And she was a storyteller from New Hampshire who had grown up in Africa, and she related stories of growing up not only in Africa, so personal stories, but interwove them with some beautiful folk tales from that country. And she had a small set of drums that she played as she told, and it was just the most mesmerizing moment that I had ever spent. And I remember distinctly a friend of mine was sitting with me at lunch, and as the storyteller, you know, continued on, she leaned over and said, why don't we go out into the lobby, because they had a lot of kiosks set up where you could purchase, you know, materials for school. And, you know, I remember saying to her, I'm not moving. And I stayed there the entire time. She probably gave a 25-minute presentation. And she just took me away. She took me to another place, another time, just by virtue of her voice and stories. And right then and there, I thought, I really need to find out more about this wonderful art. And came home and began doing some research, and the rest is history.
Yes, it is. Did your work that you had done with children in the school system, did that give you some preparation for being in front of groups and keeping them attentive?
Well, interestingly, I had put together a curriculum along with the owner of the preschool, and it was called Pathways to Peace. And basically, what the curriculum was each student had ownership of a particular country for the year. And so, say, January was Japan. That student was the student of the month. And on a particular day, we would celebrate that country. And the children would dress in the colors of the flag of that country. And we would teach them how to say hello and goodbye in the language. And the food would have to do with the country. And I would also research and find a particular book that pertain to that country, a storybook, a picture book for the children, and I would read that to them, never realizing that that connection to folk tales from other lands would then take me into storytelling. So in a way, it did prepare me, but I didn't realize it at the time. So I think all of our life experiences are a pathway to what we end up doing in life. So in that way, that was very helpful.
Well, getting back to this event in 1999, I was thinking of a word to describe that, and one that is used quite often in instances like this. This was sort of an epiphany for you, wasn't it?
Exactly. That's the perfect word. It was as if everyone else fell away in that room. It was a huge banquet room. There were a few hundred people in the room, and I really honestly felt that she was just telling stories to me, and it really was an epiphany. And I remember immediately finding the coordinator of the conference and asking, how I could reach this particular storyteller, because I wanted to find out and learn more. And this was actually really pre-Google. I'm not even sure if Google existed at the time. But when I came home, the epiphany stayed with me. It didn't go away. And I began to research and found a conference to attend, and actually flew out to Iowa to the Northland Storytelling Conference that year, not knowing a soul. And I've been attending that conference every year, almost every year since then, and now I present at that conference as well. So it really was a life-changing experience for me.
Well, one of the things that I believe we can all take from this is that many of us have experiences in life where there is a wonderful potential for awakening, for new direction, for shifting our emphasis and even our profession. But what I would call the kicker here is that you didn't just let that day pass. You took action on it.
Yeah, and I'm very grateful for being able to do that. I had some resources where I was able to, financially go to the conferences and begin to take some workshops. And also, you mentioned the internet at the beginning of our talk, and how that's how we met initially via one of your business articles. And I was able to also find a listserv which began at Texas Women's University. And they are on this listserv. There are storytellers from around the world, and the people on that listserv became my mentors. And since then, 10 years ago, a decade ago or so, many of those people are now some of my closest friends, and I've actually had the pleasure of meeting them and hosting some of them in my home. And so it really has opened up the world to me in many, many ways.
Which has helped you open the world to a lot of other people. Let's get to a lighter moment here, and yet it is quite serious because it's your ID. When and how did you select your very catchy moniker, Storybug?
Well, that actually has a connection to my mother. My mother died very suddenly, almost 14 years ago, and in the process of grieving, ladybugs kept popping up wherever I went, whenever I was thinking about my mother or felt like I needed to feel her presence with me. And I know that sounds, for some people, it might sound a little hokey and a little new age, but I'm a firm believer in spiritual connections. And so when they began to show up, these ladybugs, in the dead of winter, after my mother passed away, I began to recall that my mother always used to sing me that little nursery rhyme, "Ladybug, ladybug, fly away home." And at first, I dismissed the connection, but too many specific things happened along the way, specifically the first year that she had passed away. And so I knew that that was my connection to my mother, that whenever I needed her, a ladybug would appear in some form. It could be a live ladybug. It could be a picture of a ladybug. I have many, many vignettes about those things happening. And so someone suggested to me, when I was trying to design a business card and come up with a name, they said, well, why don't you use the ladybug? And so I did, and I thought up the moniker Catch the Story Bug, and that's how that came to pass. And so I feel in many ways it keeps that strong connection between my mother and I through the years, even though she passed away before I ever became a storyteller.
That's fascinating, and it's wonderful that every time you use that word, you have a terrific, warm family memory.
Mm-hmm. I do. She was a wonderful woman.
Well, my co-host, Christina Rhodes, has a question she'd like to ask you now.
Oh, well, lovely. Hello, Christina. Thank you so much for making time for me today.
Hello, Karen. That is such a touching story that you just told about the ladybug. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
So, Karen, we all know that storytelling is an ancient art. What are some of the high points you can tell us about the development of storytelling?
Well, you know, when we were first talking about questions, I thought, well, that is such a very heavy, heavy question. But, you know, it was very thoughtful and made me really take time to think about this. And really, storytelling is such an ancient art. It really began from writing on the cave walls. I remember reading one time that at the early turn of the 20th century, some French children made a discovery in the Pyrenees Mountains. They were drawings of animals in caves, and it turns out that they were 35,000-year-old paintings. And so that would be the oldest that that I can think of. But then, of course, from there, we go to Homer, the Greek poet, who wrote wonderful epics, and he passed those on to a sect of priests who were who preserved and recited these stories from memory. And then in China and India, the stories were written down before they were actually composed. So it's amazing how far back storytelling reaches. And of course now, with us in the present, it's even being taken other places as well by virtue of YouTube and radio, such as people as yourself that, you know, share your stories in the airwaves. There is an organization in Massachusetts now called MassMouth, massmouth.org, and they have fashioned themselves against the moth in Chicago and New York. And that type of storytelling are personal stories versus folk tales and fairy tales. And, in fact, the Moth just won the Peabody Award, and they have their own radio show on NPR. So it's amazing to see how we've gone from writing on cave walls all the way to being able to click a button on our computer and be able to hear stories. So it has a long, long history.
Yes, and it's still a central part of our lives. I think, for example, Karen, of what really attracts people to movies, what really attracts people to novels, is because that once upon a time that we heard when we were small children and our eyes lit up and we gave full attention because we knew a wonderful story was coming. Today, I still think that moviegoers want a story. It can't be just car chases. It can't be just murders. It can't be just music and scenery and love affairs. There must be a good story there. I know my wife Sandra and I enjoy watching movies. I get up very early in the day, work a very long day. At the end of the day, a good movie is nice to relax by. Twice recently, we saw movies where the ending just killed the story for us. And we were so disappointed. All of us, in many ways, resort to good, or we are attracted to good stories. It's just a central part of our life from the time we're small children.
That's true. That's true.
I got to ask you this. You say that storytelling is like theater, and yet there's a difference because there's no fourth wall. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you're at a play and the actors are on stage, most of the time they do not interact with the audience. There are of course those moments when they might, in particular plays, but theater, you are watching something taking place on stage, and you don't have the ability to be able to speak to them or step into the story with them. There is what they call in theater that fourth wall where they do not interact with the audience. In storytelling, we rely on our interaction with the audience. There is no fourth wall. So we might even take some of the audience members out of the audience to come up on the stage with us to help us with the story. Children particularly love to do that. It's very interactive, and it helps them feel even more connected. Or we might use chants or songs and have the children join in with us, and hopefully the adults do as well. And we might even, you know, in the middle of a story, break out of the story for a moment and offer a little aside to the audience. So that's what we mean. There is no fourth wall. We create the story as we're telling it with the audience many, many times. So it's not just a recitation of facts or a memorization of lines. I always say no storyteller tells a story the exact same way every time, which of course isn't true when you're on stage. You have to make sure that your lines are memorized. So that's what we mean by no fourth wall.
And of course, this takes away the concept that some people might have had that storytelling is monologue, that it's one person just telling and everybody else listening. That's not the case, is it?
No, not at all. And in fact, I teach storytelling as well to elementary students, and some of my students choose to tell what we call tandem telling style, where two students will tell the same story together. And so they will have a partner on stage. That is a much more difficult way to tell a story because your partner has to be really aware of where you are in the story and obviously be able to help you if there's a part in the story that you have a little bit of trouble with when you're in front of an audience. But no, absolutely, it's not recitation. It's not memorization. In fact, I always caution my students not to memorize their stories, and there are a number of tools I use with them to help them break the story down and to make it their own.
One of the parallels I would make, Karen, is that there's a strong tie between your concept of storytelling and my concept as a professional speaker, because as a professional speaker, I never think of an audience as passive. I feel that my job is to get an audience involved, not in silly ways that would offend them or insult their intelligence, but in ways that would challenge them, get them talking in small groups, interacting, some meaningful exercises. And there are two or three things that I want said when I'm finished with a presentation, as most professional speakers do. One is, I learned something, I enjoyed it, and the time flew by.
Exactly.
And those things happen when the audience is a part of it.
That's exactly right, and that's why you are so good at what you do, because you recognize that, and it's not static for you. It's something that's moving all the time, and you're bringing the people into what you're sharing, and it is. It's amazing. We've talked about this before, how similar our line of work is. Many times when I read your wonderful business articles, I'll smile and say, oh, my goodness, that's exactly how I would handle that. That's exactly what I would do. But, of course, I'm always learning something new from you as well. So I thank you very much for all the sharing that you do with your experiences.
Thank you for your very fine compliments. If you weren't in East Freetown, Massachusetts today, I'd buy you lunch. But
no, I'll take a rain check.
Okay, take a rain check on the next time in Boston. I'm in Boston. All right, Christina is going to give us a short station break and station ID. But before she does, let me cue our listeners, Karen, to the fact that immediately after the break, you're going to talk to us about what are the ingredients of a great story. And even better than that, you're going to read us a very short story that you have the permission of the author to read to illustrate what you're going to talk about. Stay with us on the line, Karen. We'll be right back in a minute or two.
Thank you.
Listeners, you're tuned in to Dr. Bill Lampton right here in the Communication Corner. Our guest this morning is Karen Chase of East Freetown, Massachusetts. And you're tuned in now on WBCX 89.1 FM, The Voice of Brenau. As you may know, this program airs live at 9 a.m. Tuesday, 9 a.m. on Tuesdays with a rebroadcast on Thursdays at 6 a.m. Karen is an award-winning professional storyteller and the first professional storyteller we've hosted here on the Communication Corner. Those who want to hear this interview again can find the podcast of the complete program on Dr. Bill's blog. That blog address is thecompletecommunicator.com. Also, please note that you'll find the contact information for our guest, Karen Chase, along with her photo. Once more, here's that blog address, thecompletecommunicator.com. And again, listeners, if you'll stick with us through just a short little break, and Karen will be right back with you. 89.1 WBCX, The Voice of Brenau. If you have a suggestion, comment, or request, call the studio at 770-538-4744.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can motivate your audience.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can teach your children.
I can boost your bottom line.
I can add value to your workplace.
I could be a loyal and productive employee.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
If you don't recognize my talents and ability.
If you don't hire me.
If you don't have an open mind and a workplace that's open to everyone.
If you don't realize that America works best when everybody works.
What can you do?
What can you do?
What can you do?
You can remember that it worked.
It's what people can do.
It's what people can do that matters.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
The Flying Cow Family Hour, where radio takes you places, is now on Saturday mornings from 9 to 10, right here on WBCX 89.1, The Voice of Brenau.
I shoved the envelope under my sweater and sneaked to the kitchen. Mom was on the phone in the front room. I didn't want to have to explain anything. I just wanted to be by myself. Clutching the envelope tightly, I stepped onto the ladder at the bottom of the treehouse. Something caught my eye above me, and I looked up. Light! It looked as if there were a firework display going on inside the treehouse. Crackling and snapping and whizzing sounds spun around above my head. Light shot out in sparks, dancing to the popping of noise. My first thought was to scream fire and run to the house to get Mom. My legs trembled as I inched upward, creeping up the rungs as quietly as I could. My heart banged so hard that it felt as if someone were hitting my chest. A couple more steps, and then I leaned forward, craning my neck to look inside. And then I looked up and saw... To find out what happens next, read Philippa Fisher's Fairy Godsister by Liz Kessler. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library. And visit read.gov. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Extraordinary Lives from Brenau University.
I had everything going for me. A husband, a child, and a job I loved. And then things just fell apart. I got divorced, and suddenly my job as a teacher's assistant could no longer pay the bills. It was a terrible blow, but I didn't feel self-pity. Only this overwhelming sense that this was my life, and I wanted to make it the best life I could, for me and my son. So I went back to school and enrolled in Brenau University. At Brenau, I found classrooms full of people just like me, motivated adults who wanted to better their careers and their lives. In 1 year, I'll be a licensed school teacher with my own first grade classroom. Life can knock you down, but you can change that life.
At Brenau University, you can make your life extraordinary.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online. Register at gobrenau.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brenau University, extraordinary lives.
Hello, this is Tamara Clark, hostess of Getting to the Point, a program where we explore how to better our health through Chinese medicine practice and theory. We cover topics like pain management, stress relief, and various other issues of emotional and physical health. The show is called Getting to the Point. It's only here on 89.1 WBCX. You can hear it live Wednesdays from 12 to 1, and we do rebroadcast it Friday mornings at 6 a.m. and Sunday afternoons at 2 p.m. That's Getting to the Point. Tune in and be healthy.
Welcome back to the second half of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. WBCX 89.1 FM on Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m., rebroadcasted at 6 a.m. on Thursday mornings, and you will find the complete podcast of every program that we've had for the last year on my blog, thecompletecommunicator.com. Today, we're having an extremely scintillating and highly educational conversation with Karen Chase of East Freetown, Massachusetts, a professional storyteller. Karen, just before the break, we mentioned that you're going to fill us in on what really are the key ingredients of a wonderful story, and then you're going to illustrate that by reading a portion of a story for us.
Well, I always tell my students, first, when you're looking for a story, the most important thing is to find one that you love. I read many, many stories before some story will jump out at me and I'll say, that's the one I want to tell. I can read an entire book and not find one that really speaks to me. If you're going to tell a story well, you really should love that story. And some of the things that I also share with them, it should have a beginning that captures your interest, just as you would do when fashioning a speech and a presentation. Colorful characters, of course, but not too many characters, because that can become confusing for the listener as well as the teller, although I have seen some wonderful professional storytellers use many more characters than I would feel comfortable with. A plot that's not too complicated so they can follow along, and something that would appeal to your emotions. It might be funny, it might be scary, thoughtful, and it might be sad as well. And of course, as you mentioned before, you were dissatisfied with watching a few movies because the ending wasn't satisfying.
Exactly.
So you want to look for that as well. And just one little caveat, as storytellers, a lot of people tend to think that what we do is read stories. I will have a lot of people will say to me, oh, so you read stories to children, when actually storytellers are actually telling the story. It's I tried to explain it that it's a performance-based art. So we are not actually holding books in our hands. And it's interesting because just last week I was performing at a banquet, a volunteer banquet, and I did some stories for half an hour. And at the end, someone said to me, I love those stories you read. And it was very interesting because I didn't have a book in my hand at all.
It's just a stereotype.
Yes, yes. You know, at one time I someone else said that to me, and I smiled, and I just asked her. I said, oh, that's wonderful. What book did you like best? And the minute I said that, she snapped and said, oh, that's right, there was no book. So I take that as a compliment. Mm-hmm. I do take that as a compliment because it tells me that they were so engrossed in the story that they didn't realize that I wasn't reading. And that's a very good compliment for a storyteller.
Yes, it is. Now, the Dan Kenning story, you say, illustrates these excellent points that you brought out about what a compelling story should include. And so would you please share that with us now?
I would, and as you mentioned, Dan Kenning, who is a wonderful storyteller, this is a story he collected from his grandmother, and he gave me permission to share this story with you today. And it can also be found in Healing Hearts Community Book by Allison Cox. he shared it there as well. It is a story called The Two Warriors. Centuries ago, two armies met on a field of battle, each facing the other at the end of the field. And as dawn broke over the horizon, they began to march towards each other. Every warrior took out his sword from his sheath, and they began to charge. The battle was long and fierce and bloody. It lasted all day, and soldiers fell down like pieces of shattered glass. At the end of the day, as the sun was beginning to set, two enemies were standing. They both raised their swords in the air, ready to strike. And then one of the soldiers spoke, and he said, "Let us rest now, and in the morning we will continue the battle, and the one left standing will be the victor." And the other soldier agreed, and so they unsheathed their armor, took off their helmets, and lay down beside each other on the field of battle. Well, neither soldier could sleep that night, and finally one spoke and said, "You know, in my village, I have a family, and I have a son. And he wants to be like me when he grows up, and I take him hunting and fishing." And the second soldier spoke and said, "In my village, I have a daughter. And when I look into her eyes, I see the beauty of her mother." And so all night long, the two soldiers shared stories about their families, their loved ones, their villages, where they lived. And finally, dawn broke again. And the soldiers stood up, strapped on their armor, placed their helmets on their heads, and unsheathed their swords. They turned to each other, neither speaking a word. And then, slowly, they both sheathed their swords, turned, and walked away. It has been said that you cannot hate someone when you know their story. The Two Warriors.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Karen. That has elements that just grab me and every other listener. One is that there's suspense there. We don't really know what's going to happen. And getting back to movies, to me, the worst movies are the ones that are predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Where sometimes you can almost know the next line or the next action. And once a movie gets predictable, I pretty well want to turn it off. So there's suspense there. The other element that comes through so strongly for me as a listener, and I think for our other listeners as well, is how it plays on the imagination. All good stories do that, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You want to be able to transport your listeners to another time and place. I remember telling a story. I had the honor of sharing storytelling with a symphony orchestra for a few years during their Christmas concert. And one story I was telling was a Portuguese folktale called The Queen Who Longed for Snow that I had discovered in an old book of folktales. And someone came up to me at the end and said, "I was so worried what was going to happen to that queen." And that told me that she was actually in the story as I was telling it. And again, that's a great compliment to a storyteller, because if we are doing our job right, the audience really doesn't see us. They step into the story and they forget that we are there. We are just the vehicle to transmit the information.
Well stated. Since I love radio so much, I don't know how you would rate him, but I would say that Paul Harvey's wonderful appeal was his ability to tell stories, real, live, simple stories about ordinary people and their workplace and their recreation. You felt like you knew the people that he was describing.
Yes, absolutely, and I loved Paul Harvey. I really did. And not only did you get to feel like you knew the people, but you felt like you knew him.
Yes, you did. One of the most telling, no play on words there with storytelling, but one of the most telling tributes to him, I remember there were many, of course, when he died a year or two ago. One I remember, there was a small restaurant, I can't remember the town, and that's not consequential to the story, but there was a small restaurant someplace where Paul Harvey would come on every day at noon, as he did all across America. The waiters during his broadcast would not serve. Everybody in there came to a complete halt. They didn't want any clanging of dishes or silver. That just showed the mesmerizing power of the stories that he was such a master at telling.
Oh, that is a wonderful vignette, and that is amazing. And bravo to them for taking the time out of their day to just stop and listen.
Yes. Now, we've got one more station ID coming up, and after that, you and I are going to talk about the fact that stories are not just fantasy. They're not just for our entertainment. They can also be quite relevant to the business world. So we'll talk about that right after Christina gives us another station ID.
Wonderful.
You're listening to Dr. Bill Lampton in the Communication Corner. Our guest this morning, Karen Chase of East Freetown, Massachusetts. You're tuned in to WBCX 89.1 FM, the voice of Brenau, and Karen is an award-winning professional storyteller, and we're happy to have her here because she's the first professional storyteller we have hosted here in the Communication Corner. As you may know, this program airs live at 9 a.m. on Tuesdays with rebroadcasts on Thursdays at 6 a.m. Those who want to hear this interview again, or if you missed any of it, you can find the podcast of the complete program on Dr. Bill's blog. That blog address is thecompletecommunicator.com. And also please note that you'll find the contact information for our guest, Karen Chase, along with her photo. Once more, here is that blog address, thecompletecommunicator.com.
Karen, how about the good fortune I have of working with Christina Rhodes? Isn't that a voice that ought to be on national radio and television?
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. I'm very envious. Very envious.
Hey, I was just admiring your cool accent, by the way.
Thank you, my Boston accent, yes.
Oh, we thought you were from Alabama, I wasn't.
Right.
Well, getting back to the question that I was leading up to, I don't know if you're familiar with this book, but a couple of years ago, someone asked me to do a review for Amazon of a book that had come out, Wake Me Up When the Statistic's Over.
It's on my bookshelf.
Yeah, and in that book, the whole thesis of the book is that many business people are very bored by statistics, and that's what's thrown at them, but that's not what can be exciting. And I love that book. I loved reviewing it, Wake Me Up When the Statistics Are Over. So, Karen, you had an instance that you described to me when we were doing a little email correspondence ahead of time. You were invited to help a business celebrate its 75th anniversary, and you didn't just read them Gulliver's Travels or something. Tell us what you did.
Well, as you said, it was their 75th anniversary, and they contacted me, and they decided that they wanted a storyteller to tell the story of the company's journey. The two founders, who had since passed on, but their sons were now chairman of the board and chairman of finance, the original founders had begun their company, interestingly, right in the middle of the Depression in America. And so obviously they had a lot of courage, and they had formed this company that lasted 75 years, and so they wanted me to tell the story. The woman, the head of the Vice President of Human Resources, contacted me, and she wanted something light and easy, and she said that she would have people send me letters. They were writing letters to compile a book for the owner's sons. And this happened to be 2 weeks before Christmas, and that's all I had to pull this together for them because it was a last-minute decision on their part. And so, consequently, the letters began to arrive not so much in a timely fashion, shall I say, because of the holidays. And when they did arrive, they were filled with wonderful facts about the business, but there wasn't a lot of personal information, so it would have been a lot of dry facts about the different business things that had happened along in during the years. And so, but there were two letters that came in, and each one had one line in it that really piqued my curiosity. One said, "I'll never forget the day the roof collapsed." And the other said, "I'll never forget the nickname Speedo." And I thought when I read those, there has to be stories behind those two statements. And so I asked for if I could get in contact with these people who had written the letters and speak with them. And what I found was the best thing was just to ask a question and let the person talk. And so much personal information came out from those conversations that I was then able to get a better picture of this company beyond the business facts. And that was wonderful, but I was still trying to figure out how I could put this into story form, because the president of the company then told me he wanted certain dates to be specified and the names of certain people to be mentioned, because they were going to be in the room at this huge gala, and he wanted to make sure they were recognized. So the dilemma was how to merge the two. And then what happened is someone sent another letter in, and they talked about a point in time when two gentlemen came in and offered the company a really lucrative shot at another business. But the caveat was they had to turn their back on one of their competitors. And that particular client had been with the company for a very long time, and to their credit, they refused to do so. But what happened was the person mentioning that described it as the day the two men in black hats came to the company. And that just sparked an idea in my head about tall tales and the Wild West. And so I ended up fashioning the story of the company around what would be considered kind of a tall tale, and likening the original owners to the men who tamed the Wild West. And I found something very interesting while I was doing research about the Wild West. There was something, a set of unwritten rules known as the Code of the West. And some of those things in the code were welcome strangers, honesty is absolute, your word is your bond, always help someone in need, and live by the golden rule. And what I had found out in interviewing everybody is that this company lived by those rules, and they were like family, not just employees. And so I was able to fashion a story, breaking it down into decades and following it all the way through. And interestingly, you mentioned the Red Sox earlier. One of the interesting moments was that their first office was right in back of the Fenway complex where the Red Sox play, and one of the owner's sons recently had been able to throw out one of the game balls at the park. So it came full circle.
Yes. Well, again, this points to something else that you have become pretty well known for, and you illustrated it there. You're a researcher. Stories don't just come to you and sort of a divine fiat. You have to find them. And also, you've become pretty well known in the storytelling profession as someone who helps educators and storytellers find elusive stories and fairy tales. What got you into being sort of an explorer like this?
Well, I think back. I remember as a child, when we didn't have the internet, we had the Wilbrook encyclopedias, and it was always difficult for me to complete an assignment because I was always, flipping through the book and finding something more interesting to read. So I think it goes as far back as that. But for storytelling, as I mentioned earlier, I found this listserv called Storytell, and the people on that listserv when I first began were so helpful and were my mentors in many ways. And whenever I had a beginner's question, they were very generous in helping me in answering and pointing me in the right direction. But unfortunately, at that time, I had nothing to offer because I was brand new. And I felt very bad about that, and I started to feel guilty that I was felt like I was taking all the time and never giving anything in return. And so when people would start to ask, gee, I'm looking for such and such a folk tale. Does anybody have any idea where I can locate this? And they might give some details of the story. Well, I decided that I would start researching online to see if I could narrow down and find the story for them. And that's what I did. And I continued to do that along the way and through the years as my way of saying thank you. And in 2001, one of the gentlemen on the listserv said to me, you should give a workshop on how to research stories on the Internet. This is when, you know, Google was new and people really weren't sure of how to use it effectively. And I remember saying to him, I don't give workshops. I couldn't do that. And thankfully, he didn't take no for an answer, and he continued to prod. And so that first conference that I went to in Iowa was the first conference a few years later that I gave my first workshop at, called Researching Stories on the Internet. And from there, I was contacted by the National Storytelling Magazine and asked to write a regular column in their magazine about storytelling and stories and how and where to find them on the Internet. So I've been very, very blessed, very lucky. One thing has led to another for me.
Well, one of my favorite sayings, and Christina agrees with it too, the harder I work, the luckier I get.
That's true.
and luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Absolutely.
I heard something else I agree with very much, that if somebody wakes up and you say they became famous overnight, guess what? They really hadn't been sleeping all that time.
That's right.
Hey, there's one lighter note I must ask you about. It seems to me that one of the great preservers of the art of storytelling that appeals to so many in the masses would be country music.
Mm-hmm.
What country music song doesn't weave a story? In fact, have you heard that if you played a country music song backward, you'd get your dog, your pickup truck, and your girlfriend back?
Oh, that, I like that. and I think you're right. I have very eclectic music taste, so I listen to lots of different types of music, and country music is one of them, particularly the more modern type of country music. But you are correct. Every one of those has a story, and I think part of the popularity of it is because, as in the types of stories I tell and in country music, people can relate to those stories. They can listen and say, yes, that's happened to me. I've had heartbreak. I've lost someone. Whatever type of calamity can happen in your life, you can find in the lyrics of a country music song.
Very right. You identify so easily. We're down to our last minute and a half or so.
Oh.
Amazing. Which,
yes,
proves, of course, that you're going to need to accept another invitation to us to return to WBCX. Is there any closing comment that you would like to make that we haven't covered, Karen?
Well, I think I would just like to point out that storytelling isn't just for children. Adults can certainly benefit by going to a storytelling festival or a storytelling show, whether it be to learn some stories to pass on to their children or for them just to take a break from the busyness of our world and lose themselves in the magic and wonder of stories and be brought back a little bit to their childhood days or listen to stories that appeal more to an adult and might help you when you are having some problems in your life as well.
As with the previous 58 minutes, that too was well stated. Karen, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful privilege to have you in the Communication Corner with us on WBCX.
Well, the privilege has been all mine. Thank you so much, Bill, and thank you, Christina.
Well, stay tuned again for next week and the following weeks. We don't take a summer break around here. Some of the university does, but we don't. We're in full swing. So be with us next Tuesday on WBCX 9 a.m. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. We've had the privilege today of talking with Karen Chase of Freetown, Massachusetts. Remember, please, to go to my blog. In just a little while, I'll have the podcast of this program on my blog. Additionally, a photo of Karen in action as a storyteller, her contact information as well, and the contact information of Dan Ketting, whose story she read. Always a privilege to be with you. We talk about the events on the air that you have been talking about with each other throughout the week. And we bring in experts who can give special insight. Love for you to contact me directly, 678-316-4300, or call the station 770-538-4758. Thanks for being with you. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton.